All right. Bible prophecy is what we're dealing with. And see if it comes up right. And we won't go through all the introduction that we have the last few weeks, but just one quote from Justin Martyr: to declare a thing shall come to be long before it is in being, and then to bring about that very thing according to the same declaration, this or nothing is the work of God. And we certainly agree with that. It's well put. And we understand how magnificent fulfilled prophecy is. And to the open mind, it is a declaration of the inspiration of the Scriptures. And so we have said all along that just one fulfilled prophecy is all we need to prove that the Bible is inspired. And so we have been looking at several of them. We looked at four or five with regard to Israel. We looked at one concerning Egypt. And then last week we began looking at Tyre. And spent some time looking at that. It is a magnificent fulfilled prophecy. And over the years, it has been held up by Christians like us to prove the inspiration of the Bible. Now, anything like that, and you realize that Bible critics hear it and listen to it, and so they go on the attack. And even with regard to this prophecy, you'll find that there are many articles that have been written about this particular prophecy and debunking Ezekiel 26 and things of that nature, but they have never, in my estimation, been able to successfully do it. The things that are outlined in this prophecy by Ezekiel are proven to be true and fulfilled, and so as a result of that, prove the inspiration of the Bible. So last week, we began looking at that. We got the timeline up there so we know exactly what's going on. 586 B.C. is when the prophecy was given in verse 1. And then we moved on very quickly. I won't obviously go into the detail that I did last week. But in verse 2, Son of Man, because Tyre said concerning Jerusalem, aha, the gate of the people, the peoples is broken. It has swung open to me. I shall be replenished now that she is laid waste. If you weren't here last week, we sort of talked about the close relationship that Tyre had with Israel, particularly the king of Tyre back in the days of David and Solomon. Hiram was his name, and the Bible even said that he loved David. So there was a close relationship there. But Tyre, over the years, became corrupt, and that was, of course, anticipated. There was probably, no doubt, some corruption there even when they were close with Israel. Because after all, they were Gentiles and they served false gods. And so obviously there's that. But at some point, she really turned. Tyre, we talked about last week, being a powerful city, a nation within itself, and had wealth and influence and controlled the trading in that area, and had a great naval fleet and all of that. So it was very powerful, and that led to more corruption, of course. As strong as they were physically, and with regard to wealth and that sort of thing, they became that weak and corrupt spiritually. And so you see in this particular passage, when Israel fell to Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians, they were excited about it. They looked at it as an opportunity instead of with sadness with regard to their former friends. And they now look at it as an opportunity themselves. And so because of that, God determines to destroy them utterly. Now, we looked last week at verse 3. You see there in the middle of that verse that God says he'll bring up many nations against you. And so, again, if you weren't here last week, it's important to understand, first of all, that the prophecy of Ezekiel didn't happen all at once, in one time, or even in one exact specific place. But it happened and was carried out over hundreds of years. Bible critics miss that, and because of that, they think the prophecy has failed. But you need to notice at verse 3, it talks about many nations. And verses 4 through 6, we see 4 begins with the word they, plural. And so that is talking about the many, pointing back up to the many nations that would fulfill part of this prophecy. And we'll get back to that. But then in verses 7 through 11, you see Nebuchadnezzar is mentioned specifically. Now, that's an important part of the prophecy so far as we're concerned, because it again shows how closely fulfilled this prophecy was with regard to specifics. So Nebuchadnezzar is called by name in this prophecy. And then as you go through these next several verses, you see instead of they, it is he, verse 8. He will kill with the sword. He will direct shock against his battering rams and his horses. And he will enter your gates and he will trample all your streets and he will kill your people. And so it's very specific, isn't it? Those verses are dealing with what Nebuchadnezzar and his army would do. Some of the prophecy was fulfilled by the many nations, by other nations other than the Babylonians. And so if you mix those things up, like Bible critics do, then you say, oh, well, look, this didn't happen. Nebuchadnezzar didn't do this. No, but the many nations did. And so it's important to be able to divide the prophecy properly and appropriately. And so that then is dealing with Nebuchadnezzar. We'll not again look at all the, or at least read the quotes, but Nebuchadnezzar did indeed fulfill that. It took him 13 years to besiege Tyre, and so he did it. And we looked last week, we'll not read them, but you can see Josephus, who we quote for a lot of different reasons over things. He was a great historian, a traitor, but a historian nevertheless. And he testifies to the fact that Nebuchadnezzar did indeed besiege Tyre. We could just go on and on with these different quotes. I had two up there. Listen, literally, I could put hundreds of quotes up there. All you have to do is Google it. There's many different things that they have found. I think they found like 50 plates of things that talked about Nebuchadnezzar and Tyre together and how that he defeated them. And they're all in a museum in Germany or something now. But there's no question that that really took place. Like you could just see Bible critics, their only defense about this is to say, number one, it never really happened. Or number two, it happened out of order or something along those lines. But we have evidence from archaeology and things that have been discovered that prove it happened exactly the way Ezekiel said it would. So that's fulfilled prophecy, just with Nebuchadnezzar. And it's not really the most interesting part of the prophecy, but it is powerful. If we stop right here, we wouldn't have to look at anything else in Ezekiel 26. And you know, here's a prophecy fulfilled. How in the world would Ezekiel know that Nebuchadnezzar would do what he did? And yet he did it exactly the way Ezekiel said he would. And so we have that. Then you move on, and this is where we left off last week, talking about Alexander the Great. And he began to fulfill. He didn't fulfill it completely, but he began to fulfill the aspect of the prophecy that referred to many nations. And so he went up against Tyre as well. And we kind of, last week, we talked about why, you know, history is sort of, when you're dealing with historians, there's a zillion historians for everything. And so with regard to Alexander the Great, for example, his story has been told just over and over and over. And many good historians approach it from different angles. And so with regard to Alexander and why he attacked Tyre, it just depends on which historian you listen to. Like some will say it's because of his pride, and you know, he saw it was a great, great challenge to defeat the Tyrians. No one had been able to do it before. Even though several tried, no one was able to. And so pride got the best of him, and he said, like, you know, I'm a great general. He's conquering nations and doing it very rapidly, and he's going to demonstrate his greatness by defeating Tyre. And probably some truth to that. No doubt he had some pride. And there's other historians, if you read some other accounts, they'll say, well, the Persian Empire, while pretty much defeated, wasn't totally defeated. there was still some Persian influence in the Mediterranean area there. And Tyre, of course, would have still been under their influence a little bit. To let them stand would have been a great military mistake. And so some historians say he had no choice but to attack them and subdue them. And then a lot of what I read and what I suggested last week was that he was on his way, just conquering. He had just conquered the Sidonians. And when he got to Tyre, that he wanted to worship the god, and that they had a temple there. I think Melkort was the name of the god there. It was the deified version of Hercules or Heracles, however you want to say that. And he wanted to go in there, and they refused to do that, refused to allow him to do this. This historian said the king of Tyre proposed a compromise. Tyre would become Alexander's ally, but he should sacrifice on the mainland at Old Tyre. Now, right away, you see the language of that. And you know, with a man like Alexander, that wasn't going to fly. Like, you what? You want to become an ally? You think that's what this is about? He wasn't trying to make an ally out of these nations. He was defeating them. But so they're thinking, oh, well, you know, we'll be your ally, but you can't come to our island and worship in our temple, which, you know, that's predictable. That would defile their temple for a foreigner to go in there. So they proposed that he just worship on the mainland. And that angered Alexander. He sent envoys to say this was unacceptable and told them to surrender. They murdered the envoys and threw them off their wall. And several historians verify that account is true. Now, all of these things I just mentioned probably played a part. They're probably all true. Just depends on the historian and what point of view they want to look at. It probably was all true. But this is what caused there to be this war between the Tyrians and the Macedonians in the very first place. So he decides that he is going to defeat this city. So you have the city, and you can see, as I've said to you, it's a half a mile off the shore. So saying you're going to do it and being angry and sticking out your chest and saying, I'm Alexander the Great, you don't do this to me, that's one thing. Actually defeating the Tyrians is something else. And I made a mistake last week because, some of this stuff gets confusing. And you try to remember there. Yeah, I talked about the walls around the mainland city. And by the way, there are some Bible critics who, with going back to Nebuchadnezzar, they say, oh, that wasn't true because the wall wasn't around the mainland city. It was around the island city. Well, it's been discovered that there were walls around both cities. See, and I kind of got confused on my walls there. The wall, remember I was talking about the two walls about 6 feet apart? That was actually around the island city, not the mainland city. It was really, and I just got confused in what I read about that. But it was really, so around this island, out a half a mile from the shore, you had this wall, a double wall. And not only that, but the wall was built, it was 150 feet high, and it was built right at the edge of the island. Like if there was 5 feet there, that might be enough to put a ladder right there and climb up the wall. But it was right at the edge. They did that on purpose. So now if anyone was going to try to conquer them, they'd have to put that ladder in a ship. And the waters were rough, particularly on the side of the city towards the shore. They tell us it was particularly deep. And the wind would often blow. So can you imagine putting a ladder, trying to keep it still in a ship that's being rocked by waves and wind and all that? And then you have some archers on top of the wall trying to pick you off. I mean, you can see why the Tyrians thought, you can't, I don't care how big and bad you are, you can't defeat us. We're safe in this island, on this island. And behind these walls. And then they also had a fleet. They were the masters of the sea, the Tyrians, really. So they had a lot of protection there. And so what was he going to do? Well, we've been talking about he decided then that he was going to build what they call a mole or a causeway from the island to, or from the shore rather, to the island. And that's how he was going to get there. It was a risky proposition. It was a bold thing to do, to even think to try to do that was like most people would laugh at you. Even his army thought he was kind of crazy. But of course they do whatever he told them to do. But they thought, man, it's not working. How in the world are we going to do that? But they set out to do it. The Tyrians weren't worried about it because they just thought, you know, good luck with that. Let's just see how far you get doing that. And so he started to do that. And now when it comes down to our prophecy, what is really interesting is you remember in verse 12, it says your stones and your timber and soil, they will cast into the midst of the waters. And that's exactly what Alexander did. Diodorus the Siculus, this Greek historian, he was a historian around 50 BC or so. And he says, the king saw that the city could hardly be taken by sea because of the engines mounted upon its walls and the fleet that it possessed, while from the land it was almost unassailable because it lay 4 furlongs away from the coast. Nevertheless, he determined to run every risk and make every effort to save the Macedonian army from being held in contempt by a single undistinguished city, according to them. That's how they viewed everybody. Immediately, he demolished what was called Old Tyre and set many tens of thousands of men to work carrying stones to construct a mole. And again, remember what I said about historians, and they all, it's just like Josephus. He was a great historian, and we learn a whole lot from him. Was he always precisely accurate, though? Particularly Josephus was known for embellishing and that sort of thing. And you see here where it talked about that he demolished what was called Old Tyre. There's probably some truth to that. Actually, most historians believe that the ruins from Nebuchadnezzar laid waste there for 200 years. And like when Alexander got there, it was already ruined. But I don't know but that it wasn't built up some over those 2 centuries. And Alexander probably had to do some demolishing there. But for the most part, the ruins were already there. But Alexander got them, and what did he do with them? What did he do with all those ruins? He did exactly what Ezekiel said he was going to do. He cast them into the midst of the water. Fulfilled prophecy. I mean, that's powerful if you stop and think about that. That all of those centuries before, Ezekiel said that was going to happen. Now here comes Alexander doing exactly what Ezekiel said was going to happen. He took it. And by the way, if you go back and you read the prophecy, you also see in there where it was prophesied that the city would be laid bare like a rock. That's exactly what happened. Because he scraped all of the ruins that were left behind, threw them into the sea, and left it like a bare rock. Amazing. That's fulfilled prophecy. But the whole thing, again, was not going to be easy at all. Like the Tyrians were tough. And they weren't about to give up their beloved city. Beside the fact they loved the city and all of that, you know, when Alexander got to them, they knew that meant death. So they fought, and they fought hard. And it took Alexander 7 months, most historians say from January to July, it took him to finally get to the city. But he starts to build that mole, and it's slow going. I mean, you know, that was going to be a hard thing. And what he decided to do was he built these, what they call siege towers. That was 3 levels built out of wood. And on these towers, there would be soldiers and catapults and some battering rams. And so when they got close enough, he'd be able to shoot rocks and things and break down the wall. They got, you know, when he got right up there, of course, the battering rams would work. But he built 2 of them, put them on wheels, could roll them in place. And so he had everything, and he knew exactly how he was going to destroy the Tyrians. Well, they, again, at first they thought, well, you know, no, they've said that. We've heard all this before. But as, you know, some months went by, this thing started to be built. And they started to realize, uh-oh, he's doing this. It's getting close. So they knew they had to go on the offensive. And they sent, they had their own ships, and they sent ships out and started to pluck off the workers, you know, work trying to build this mold, this mole. And then they did something that was pretty ingenious themselves. They got two ships and they set the ships on fire and headed them right towards the causeway. And they hit the causeway and caught it on fire and destroyed it. So, you know, there goes Alexander's great plan. But he wouldn't be deterred. So he started a second causeway, made it 200 feet wider with more protection on it. And so just started the thing again. And this time, you know, he made even more progress and he kind of learned from the mistakes. And even the Tyrians realized, you know, we're in trouble. Towards the end, they realized we have to do something because he's going to reach us and we're going to be killed. And so they kind of observed how Alexander worked and realized that he would sleep during a lot of the day with his army, let them get rest. And they kind of, you know, in there, they were kind of observing things and trying to figure out. And so they figured that they would do a sneak attack when he was asleep and sent 13 ships to go on the offensive and attack them, catch them by surprise. But unfortunately for them, Alexander wasn't resting when they thought he was. And he discovered the plan. Now, by this time, Alexander realized something himself. He realized that he wasn't really going to be able to defeat the Tyrians just on land and just by this, you know, from these towers. He needed a navy himself. He needed a fleet himself. So he got these cities that he had captured, the Sidon, and there was a little city there. Byblos was, I believe is how you pronounce it, was there. Ardus was there. And even Cyprus sent him 120 ships to use. So now all of a sudden, Alexander, what many people don't realize, he had a navy himself. With these other cities and nations that of course he had defeated them, and so they decided to work with him and give him the ships and everything, and so now all of a sudden he's a real force. And but at the same time, you think of the prophecy, Sidon, Cyprus, Eridus, and all the, now doesn't that start to fulfill even more many nations? It wasn't just Nebuchadnezzar. Now you got Alexander the Great, and now you have these other nations. And the prophecy really wasn't completely fulfilled with Alexander. After this, we'll find that the Tyrians continued to be attacked through history, all the way up till about 1291, when the Muslims took the city one last time from the Crusaders and destroyed the city completely and never was rebuilt. So there's no question that the part of the prophecy that identified many nations came about. Critics like to pick on that, but there's nothing to pick on. I mean, many nations came about. But with Alexander, again, he has these ships now, and so he saw that these 13 ships from Tyre were coming, and he flanked them with his own ships, and basically destroyed them. The Tyrians on the island saw what was developing. They tried to get word out to the ships, but it was all too late, and that was really it. And shortly after that, they made it to the island. Even when they made it to the island, there was trouble. Like those Tyrians were tough. And I guess we would be too if our life was in the balance. But when some of those soldiers of Alexander got right there to the island and trying to get in, they were pouring hot sand on them. And it would get all in their armor and things and burn them real bad. They'd get their armor off, and as quickly as they got their armor off, they get shot with an arrow. And so they were, you know, you got to give it to the Tyrians. They were trying. They were doing everything they can to survive, but the city was breached. They tell us on the south side towards Egypt, the city was breached. And so they, now these Greek soldiers, Alexander's army, they're not happy because they've lost a lot of friends. Many people, the Tyrians were able to kill a lot of Alexander's army in all of this. And so they're in there and they're in there to slaughter the Tyrians. And they do. 2,000 men, those of military age, were crucified. And then another 30,000, we're told, were sold into slavery. And so Tyre fell. And what do you think Alexander did when he got into the city? Can you get? Yeah, exactly right. Went to the temple and he worshiped, did what he wanted to do in the very first place. There were some of the diplomats that had got into the temple there and locked themselves in there. I believe I read that even the king of Tyre got in there. And for whatever reason, Alexander spared them. But he went in there all dressed up in his attire and worshiped his, a god or whatever. So he did what he wanted to do. So, but all of that, so again, you stop and think about that prophecy and what was fulfilled then. The part with Nebuchadnezzar was definitely fulfilled. We have record after record, historical record, that tells us that happened, just like Ezekiel said. And then a couple of hundred years, like 240 years later, here comes Alexander. He fulfills some of the prophecy, lays the island bare like a rock. Throws the ruins into the timber and the stone, all of that into the sea. Just like the prophecy said, many nations would come against it. And that happened. All of that happened. And there's no way that Ezekiel could have known any of that. That's fulfilled prophecy. And if you have an open mind in our objective, and you just want to look, you'd have to ask yourself the question, how did he know that? And again, we know because of when Ezekiel lived and the kings that, and he outlined that. Remember, I said he outlined that very well. Who was king of Judah and everything and all of that at the right time. So when you put it all together, there really isn't any doubt but that Ezekiel prophesied this before it happened. Like, again, that's the one area that some, well, maybe he wrote all of that after the fact. No, we know he didn't. And anybody with an objective mind knows that he didn't. So the question still remains, how did he know it? That these things, how would he know that timber and wood and all that would be thrown into the, well, how did he know that? And there's only one answer, inspiration. That's it. Now, there's one more thing, though, with all of this very quickly. It says that it would never be rebuilt. And I suppose this is the part of the prophecy that is attacked the most by Bible critics. And again, if you were to look it up and Google some of it, you would see all kinds of people attacking. So, there's no question that there's still a Tyre today. This Bible skeptic, Till, I think was his name. I don't know his first name. But he said, in fact, Tyre still exists today, as anyone able to read a map can verify. This obvious failure of a high-talented Old Testament prophet is just one more nail in the coffin of the Bible inerrancy doctrine. And that's just typical. That's just one quote. But that's just typical of hundreds of Bible critics that attack this prophecy. And a lot of times it has to do with the condition of Tyre today. So the question is, did the prophecy come true? Was Tyre defeated? And was it ever rebuilt? And the answer is no. In spite of what they say, and in spite of what is going on in so-called modern Tyre today, the prophecy really does stand. Here was a fella, a Dutch traveler who visited Syria way back in 1598. So whoever he is, we don't really know who he is. Doesn't have any real importance other than being a traveler. But the point of it, he was there. And we know of a lot. I just don't have time to put everything on the screen, all of the quotes. We have commentaries, I think, J. Vernon McGee or something like that. He in his commentary on Ezekiel, he talks about the time when he was there. He traveled that area and actually saw with his own eyes the ruins of Tyre and things. So, but anyway, this particular traveler says that this city so often restored, I want you to kind of take note of some of the little things here. This city often restored after being overthrown now at length appears to be utterly ruined, so that it has ceased to be any longer a city, and only some inconsiderable vestiges of her former ruins are now visible. If you accept a few arches and baths and some ruined walls and collapsed towers and mere rubbish, there is now nothing of Tyre to be discerned. And he was there way back in the end of the 16th century. But he was there and saw that. And here's some interesting things. See where it says that if you accept a few arches there? Well, what's interesting, in 1969, they discovered what they call the Triumphant Arch. It was an arch that was built over the ancient road that led from the shore to the island. And we have pictures of it. Today, you can see it. Now, does that look like the city was rebuilt to you? That look inhabited to you? Now here's the thing. Again, if you were to get out a map or whatever, if you were even to travel to Lebanon and whatever, there's a place that, and they call it Tyre, and there's a modern city there. In fact, here from this same arch, this triumphal arch, here's another view of it. And I want you to see some. Can you see in the background all those buildings? That's modern Tyre. Guess where it is not? It's not located on the ancient site. That city has never been rebuilt. But Bible critics say, oh, you know, there's over 1,000 people in Tyre today. There's like 117, I think. I think maybe I read 130 somewhere, a population in Tyre. It's there. The Bible is wrong. It hasn't been fulfilled. No, that's not what Ezekiel was talking about. The ancient ruins are still there. And it has never been built upon. Here's an unknown reference that I searched and searched for his name, but I couldn't find his name in it. But he says, and yes, there is indeed a city called Tyre in modern day Lebanon. And indeed, it might be seated on the exact same spot as the original Tyre. Let me pause and say, I don't think it was. I think clearly from the last picture, it wasn't. But let's just say, he's just saying, well, even if you can prove that, he said, but this is Lebanon's Tyre, not the Phoenician Tyre that had taunted the Jews and had gloated over the destruction of the holy city of Jerusalem. It was the Phoenician Tyre that Ezekiel was speaking of, and that city no longer exists. And that's a fact. I don't believe even there's anything on. In fact, I think we can prove. I was reading somewhere where the ancient Tyre is actually, If I can remember the name, what you call it, it's actually classified as wetlands. Is that the right terminology? In other words, it's protected land. You couldn't build on it if you wanted to. And there's some real pretty, whatever, something there that they don't want anyone to mess with. So it's protected. You couldn't build on it if you wanted to. So I don't think it is in the same place. But even if it was, the Phoenician city that Ezekiel prophesied about is long gone. Even the ruins that you see there aren't Phoenician ruins. And you see that in different things. Here's the Columbian Encyclopedia, 5th edition. It says the principal ruins of the city today are those buildings erected by the Crusaders. There are some Greco-Roman remains, but any left by the Phoenicians lied underneath the present town. In fact, that arch that we had on the screen a while ago, that was from the Roman period. So anything left from that city, the Phoenician city, is buried under a lot of rubble. Many people think some of it is in the sea. That's not being built up again, ever. Just like Ezekiel said. The ESV Study Bible said the modern city of Tyre is of modest size and is near the ancient site, though not identical to it. Archaeological photographs of this ancient site show ruins from ancient Tyre scattered over many acres of land. No city has been rebuilt over these ruins, however, in fulfillment of this prophecy. Has it been rebuilt? No. Is there a place called Tyre today in modern Tyre? Yes, but it's not what Ezekiel was prophesying about. One more thing, very quickly, interesting. Kyle Butt from the Apologetic Press, he quotes this George Davis in his book, Fulfilled Prophecy, that proved the Bible. And in this book that George Davis wrote, it included a picture of Syrian fishermen under which the following caption appears. Syrian fishermen hauling in their nets on the probable site of ancient Tyre, which perished as predicted by the prophet. And here's the picture of it. That's in that book. Here are fishermen on Tyre doing their work. And when you think of that, and you just look at that picture of those fishermen, and what are they doing? They're spreading their nets. And you think of the verse, I will make you a bare rock, and you shall be as a place for the spreading of nets. I wonder if Ezekiel's prophecy came to pass. It did. Exactly like he said it would. Fulfilled prophecy. It's no wonder that for years, Bible believers have held up this prophecy to prove the inspiration of the Scripture. Remember, one fulfilled prophecy does the job. And we see several of them just in Ezekiel chapter 26 itself. And by the way, if you really did your research, you would find that there were many prophecies from Amos and other prophets that also, Zechariah also talked about the fall of Tyre and gave some details. Not quite as much as Ezekiel, but still they did, and so all of those prophecies were fulfilled as well. And so the inspiration of the Scriptures. All right, well, next week we'll look at the prophecies concerning Jesus. And we'll not spend a lot of time on it. We could spend weeks just on that if we wanted to go one by one. But again, there are really hundreds of prophecies with regard to Jesus. One man said there's 332 prophecies that Jesus fulfilled. And so we'll just quickly go through those and put them up on the screen. From our standpoint as Christians, was that the first bell that rang just a moment ago? That was the second one? That was the first. Okay. That was the second. Okay. Peace back to you there, Doc. I guess I had to be quiet. So we'll pick up with the prophecies of Jesus next week. Appreciate your attention.